Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear him. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." Then Jesus told them this parable. Suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Does he not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? And when he finds it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulders and goes home. Then he calls his friends and neighbors together and says, "Rejoice with me, I have found my lost sheep." I tell you that in the same way there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who did not need to repent. Or suppose a woman has 10 silver coins and loses one. Does she not light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it? And when she finds it, she calls her friends and neighbors together and says, "Rejoice with me, I have found my lost coin." In the same way, I tell you, there is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Well, today we're looking at some parables that Jesus told about some things that are lost. And as an avid outdoorsman, the subject of being lost really bothers me greatly. I also teach hunter's education, and we spend a lot of time talking with people about not getting lost, but then what to do when you do get lost and realize that you have a problem and how search and rescue works. We want you to get found. It's kind of a big deal to get lost out in the woods. You could really be in a bad situation and make yourself be in a worse situation very quickly and easily. Now, of course, I myself have never been lost. I have spent extensive time exploring areas that were previously unknown, but not lost. There actually was a time that I sort of got lost. When I was hunting, I found a new place to set up. I kind of knew the area, but not really. Marked it on my GPS. Now, when you're hunting, you need to get out there before the animals wake up, so you walk out into the woods in the dark. And that particular year, there was a no moon or anything, so it was just a special kind of dark in the forest. But I'm following my GPS. I know where I'm going. I've got the trail marked and all, and I'm walking through the dark, and all of a sudden, I come to this barbed wire fence, which I know for a fact is a half mile to my left. That's a problem. And as I'm standing there scratching my head, trying to figure out what's going on, I discover a feature to my brand new gloves. They have a little thing you can open up the fingertip so that it exposes your finger. You don't have to take off your glove so you can feel the trigger when you shoot. And that's held open by a magnet. So as I'm walking along, the compass of my GPS is not pointing north, it's pointing at my finger. So I made this giant left turn. And I'm standing in the dark in the forest looking at a fence, scratching my head, wondering, now what do I do? And the confusion and the panic kind of sets in. Even though I'm not truly lost, I'm not in any real danger, I should be way over there. And I'm over here, and now what do I do? Now, for those that need an ending to the story, I did find my way out. It's okay. But being lost is a terrifying thing. What if that fence wasn't there? How far would I have wandered till I realized I had a problem? What if I was actually walking towards a wilderness area instead of somebody's private land? How far would I have gone off course? How long until somebody realized I was missing and needed help? How long would I have just been out there? Being lost in the woods is scary. Being lost in life is even worse. Being lost spiritually is just a horrifying position to be in. And that's the position that Jesus is drawing our attention to today. Now, today's text in Luke 15 actually starts in Luke 14, and Pastor Harlan talked about that last week. Jesus had been invited to the home of a prominent Pharisee, and they were going to eat together and talk and have these high-level theological discussions. It was a great time. And of course, Jesus, being Jesus, he taught some other parables there. And they were kind of hard for the Pharisees to hear because he talked about being a hypocrite. And he talked about the need for humility. And while he's talking and teaching, word gets out, and all these people come and start gathering around, and they would have come into the courtyard of this Pharisee's home, and now there's crowd is gathering around them. And Luke describes this crowd as a big group of people that also included tax collectors and sinners. That doesn't sound like the best crowd, does it? Now, I don't know about you, but I think for most of us, in the last 2,000 years, our view of tax collectors has not really changed a whole lot. None of us are really excited about those people. But this term, sinners, it kind of confuses a lot of people. I mean, aren't we all sinners in need of Christ? That's not exactly what he's saying here. In biblical terms, you have basically two groups of people. The righteous, and that doesn't mean that they never sin or anything. It just simply means their lifestyle is marked by trying to follow God's way. They're drawing close to God as they can. God is in connection with them. Their life is marked by God. And then the other group of people, the sinners. Those are the people who deny God. They push God away. They just don't care about the things of God or His kingdom. And their lifestyle reflects that. Well, these are the people that are coming around to be with Jesus. And the Pharisees are upset. I mean, who's this Jesus guy? He's hanging out with this kind of people. I mean, after all, bad company corrupts good morals, right? Who wants to associate with this kind of people? Why are you even spend the time and energy to eat with these people? And they're saying this is a problem. Well, Jesus knows what he's doing. So he does what Jesus does. He tells a story. Not just any story, he teaches a parable. Now, this is a tradition that the rabbis used in that time frame. I remember we didn't have a lot of written things at that time. So you tell a story so people can remember the lesson. Well, in the rabbinic tradition, the way they often would open up their parable was with this rhetorical question. And the question generally expected a negative answer. It was kind of phrased like, who would go and do this absolutely ridiculous thing? Well, of course I wouldn't do that. It's ridiculous. Or they might phrase it the other way, why would you neglect to do this good thing? Oh, I wouldn't do that. I'm going to do the good thing. And you see Jesus using this often in his teachings. He talks about things like, if your child comes and asks for a fish, would you give him a snake? Of course not. That's ridiculous. And the lesson is, well, if we people who are sinners can figure this out, how much more is God going to get it right? Of course God does the right thing. He does it way better than we do. So Jesus opens up this story and he sets up this scenario. He says that there's a shepherd out in the field. He's got 100 sheep. And one of them goes missing. And look at the way he phrases this. He says, does he not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the one lost sheep until he finds it? Of course, that's expecting the answer. Well, of course you do this. But as Pastor Harlan pointed out with the kids, we have this ethical dilemma. Do you really do that? Is that right? There's 99 others. What happens if wolves come while you're gone and just decimate the rest of the flock? You now went from 99 to 1. This is not the smartest thing, is it? I mean, don't the needs of the many outweigh that of the few? Is this really the right answer? Oh, Jesus says, yeah, that's the way this is supposed to work. You leave the 99, you go after the lost one. But Jesus, being Jesus, isn't happy to just set up an ethical dilemma. He puts the Pharisees in a bind right from the beginning. Of course, the Pharisees want to be the good guy in the story, right? They want to be the leaders, the heroes. And Jesus says, there's a shepherd with sheep. Okay, now who do you want to be? Well, nobody really wants to be the sheep. They're not the brightest of animals. They do dumb things. Nobody really wants to be the shepherd either. Now, in the Old Testament, we see shepherds in a good light. They're the guardians of Israel. You know, the Lord is my shepherd, I will not want. But by the time Jesus was around, that was not really the general view of shepherds. And it wasn't just the Jews, the Greeks, the Romans, nobody liked the shepherds. They were smelly and stinky and disgusting, and they were thieves. They were the people to be avoided. Nobody liked the shepherds. They were seen as just generally dishonest. So the Pharisees are now listening to this parable, trying to figure out where do they fit in. I don't really want to be a shepherd. I really don't want to be a sheep. And he's got this shepherd doing something I don't like. I don't like this story at all. But Jesus continues and he says, the shepherd does the right thing and he seeks after this one poor lost sheep. Again, sheep aren't real smart animals. This happens surprisingly often. Actually, with a lot of grazing animals. They put their head down and they go munch, munch, walk, walk, munch, munch, walk, walk. And the rest of them are going this way and the one goes off this way. Usually what happens is someplace in here they look around and go, whoops, where's everybody else? And they make a noise and the rest of the herd or flock answers, oh, all right, and they go back. But sheep will just keep wandering. And next thing, they're on the other side of the hill and they can't hear each other. And who knows where it is? And it will just keep munching and walking infinitely. The shepherd has to go get it. Well, now Jesus says that the shepherd does do this, and then when he finds it, he picks it up and he carries it back. Now, I'm not much of a shepherd, so that seems kind of odd to me. Wouldn't you just throw a rope around its neck and let it walk itself back? It's not injured or anything. Well, I've actually read some articles from shepherds that say, yeah, this really is what you do. You do pick it up and you carry it back to the flock. Because the sheep is scared and the sheep is alone. They're herd animals. They want to be together. And so the shepherd takes it back to the rest of his buddies, back to the good grass, back to safety. And by carrying it, the sheep learns the shepherd is the safe place. I need to stay close to the shepherd. That's where my safety is. It actually is not as goofy as it sounds to us. But here's where the story does get goofy. He calls up all of his friends and says, come on, let's have a big party and celebrate. I found my one sheep. I tried to come up with something that is some sort of a more modern, city-fied example to help us understand this. I'm not really sure I could come up with a good one. Maybe it was a Tuesday afternoon and your friend calls you up and says, I lost my phone, but now I found it. Come on over, I'm having a big party to celebrate. What would you do to that? We'd be, well, I'm happy for you. It's Tuesday. I got to work tomorrow. I can't come over and have a big, you know, let's get together some other time. I'm happy, but okay. It'd be hard for you to celebrate that, wouldn't it? It just sounds goofy. But that's not the story Jesus tells. He says everybody gets together and they have this big party and they celebrate. And it's just over the top. They're so happy. The one sheep is back. Interesting story. But Jesus doubles down on this. He tells another parable that's similar. He talks about this lady who loses a coin. Now again, it sounds to us like she lost some pocket change. In Greek, it says it's a drachma. A drachma is like a day's wages. So it actually is kind of a big deal. It's a good sum of money she's lost, but she tears up her place, she cleans her place, she's got to find this coin, and she doesn't give up until she finds the coin. Now again, think about the people listening to this story. Who are you in this story? This lady that's sweeping her house? Or an inanimate coin that rolled under something? Well, I don't really like my choices there either. But Jesus says that's the way things work in the kingdom of God. Now here's the other part of this. Notice that the lost one is just lost. It's doing nothing but being lost. The others that never got lost, what are they doing? They're being not lost. It's the shepherd and the lady who do all the work. 100% of the work happens by that person who's going out and looking. And then Jesus says, this is how God's kingdom works. God is not going to give up on you. God is the one that's doing all the work. I've heard it said that the only thing I've added to my salvation is the sin that made it necessary in the first place. This is how Jesus describes the kingdom of heaven. But here's the best part of all these stories. He does leave the ones who are still there behind to go find them. He keeps them safe at the same time. Nobody is lost permanently. Nobody is forgotten. Nobody falls through the cracks of the universe. God is the one that goes out and he does what is needed to find the lost. And then all of heaven rejoices when the lost repent and come to God and join the rest of the believers. Now, there's a third story after this. We're not going into it today because it's kind of long, but it's the story of the prodigal son. And Jesus describes the other part of that equation with that story. The son that never left asks why he didn't get a party. The father says, because you've always had me. The sheep who are not lost get to lie down in the green pastures and have the flowing streams. They're not in a bad place. They always get to enjoy the shepherd. The other coins are where they're supposed to be in the purse. They're safe. They're guarded. Those of us who are in God's kingdom get to enjoy all of the things of God's kingdom already. But there are still those who are lost in life. And God does not give up on any of them. God continues to seek after them. And God will do whatever is needed. And there's one other part to that. Because God is concerned about that, those of us who are in God's kingdom need to make that our concern as well, that we are seeking the lost. Now, don't misunderstand me. It's not our job to save people. That's a God-sized job. But it's our job to be concerned about what is going on around us and to seek out, how do I point these people to God? Don't allow them to remain lost. To send out the signal flares so that the search and rescue of heaven can find them more easily. This is something we should be very concerned with. But moreover, when the lost become found, when they're saved from their condition, it's a reason for us to rejoice. Jesus says there's a party in heaven every time somebody repents. We too should be partying every time that somebody comes to know who Christ is. There's a story floating around social media. There's a guy whose name I've never found, but apparently he collects pictures of baseball hitters who just hit a walk-off home run. As they're rounding third, they come around, and you can see in the stands all the crowd cheering and high fives and carrying on. And the whole team is gathered around home plate, can't wait for him to get there, celebrating. He says, this is what he thinks it's like when we go to heaven. Sorry, the smoke's killing me today. He says that when we get to heaven, all of the angels are rejoicing for us because we finally made it home. This is the view we should have of our spiritual lives and those around us. Rejoicing every time that somebody comes in alignment with God through Christ.